Good evening, everybody. This is KI0RE, also known as Terry in Colorado, or Terry from Colorado. This is the NLA Hams Net. It's conducted every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. We discuss things that concern the NLA and ham radio. So the first thing that I want to do, it used to be a directed net. It's kind of a loosely directed net since we're on a conference call and not on the air. But I'd like to throw it open for questions. I have some things we can talk about, but most of you will probably not find it joyful. I don't know. So does anybody have any topics or questions or suggestions, criticisms, even toe jelly that they'd like to put out on the floor? Take it now. Hearing nothing, I will just continue. I wanted to talk about CHIRP. CHIRP seems to be getting more and more momentum, and it's very good. CHIRP is a program. What it does is you hook it to your radio, then you load your radio, you load your radio's memories into CHIRP, and then you can move them all around, do whatever you want to do, save it, and then load it back into the radio with all the changes you made. Lots and lots faster than sitting down and programming the radio by hand. I don't know how many of you have ever seen what it looks like to program a radio, but the Bowfangs are one of the few that I think are especially difficult to get right the first time. They're good radios. They do a pretty good job. However, compared to other radios that most hams are used to, they're very difficult to program. Well, instead of trying to remember all that, and I have a Kenwood TMD-700 and a milk crate that I use every year as a mobile rig to help out with the Bike MS, which is the 150-mile ride in Colorado to raise money to fight MS. And that thing it's different enough from the program, from the radios I've used before, that I really have to open the manual and kind of reteach myself every year, because I don't use the milk crate radio very often. And so I re-educate myself on how to program it, and I do so. And it's not a problem, because I'm just remembering stuff that I haven't used for almost a year. But it is something I have to go through. Well, this kind of, you still got to do that, but now I can take and program all the frequencies I want on all the repeaters around the area and then put them in the machine in a specific way using CHIRP. That's the software I was talking about. And then go and make them the same so that they have all the offsets, all the side tones, all the listen frequencies for all the repeaters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So do we have any questions so far?
Well, this is KC3HVA. I thought CHIRP sounded awful familiar, so I looked up on our ham website, and there is a short tutorial there on how to use CHIRP to program your Bowfang. So if you haven't been on there for a while, go kick up the Committee of Safety, scan down about item number 4, is the ham net, click on it, and scan down a ways, and you'll come to a nice little short DVD on how to program using CHIRP, and I'm sure it would apply to other units as well.
Is the is the link to Chirp on there also? To download Chirp?
Let's see. I think I had that included in there. If it was not on the video,
Chirp,
I'll go back.
DNAplanet.com, something like that.
Without hitting it and playing it, I can't verify that. But if it isn't, I'll dig it up and put it on the site, okay?
Okay, no problem. Chirp is an excellent piece of user-supported software. And they have been working on it for several years now. And there's a lot of nonsense that goes on between radios so that they make them proprietary so that you can't use that radio software to program this other radio. Chirp does more than I've ever seen before. They don't do all radios, but it's only because somebody hasn't gone through and figured out what the stuff looks like yet off of a particular radio. If you work with the guys, there's a mailing list. Let me see if I have the mailing list. It's up there. You can find it. It's Chirp users. They're on the Chirp users. Chirp underscore users at intrepid.dnaplanet.com. So everything comes off of Dan Planet, DanPlanet, Dan Planet. And that is the founder. One of the founders is named Dan, and I forget what his last name is. But he maintains this area. Now, Chirp is one of the more active programming radios, programming software that you'll find. They program a new version probably 2 to 3 times a week, and it's updated. And usually when there's an updated, they're fixing a bug, so it's getting better all the time, or they're adding a new radio. So I just wanted to talk about some of the issues that you have to think about when you're programming a radio. And I'm looking at the UV5R manual that comes, the manual that comes with the UV5R Plus radio. Excuse me, about how to plug in the battery and what all the different switches and knobs and everything do. And just going through it, there's a few things you have to know. Okay. One is that there's even a display on page 11 of this thing that shows you just the display and what all the little symbols mean on the display. You have to deal with things, especially if you're going to repeaters, that not only do you have to save the repeater output frequency and the offset, which gives you the repeater input frequency, some of them discrete. I think the Bofang radio, it discreetly, you put in the output frequency and the input frequency. And so the offset is, you know, I don't know, you don't need to know what it is, but it's good to know because that way you get the input frequency. When you're talking on a repeater on somebody's radio, even your own, if you're listening to the repeater, you're listening to the output frequency. And when you press the button to transmit and give your call sign, you'll see the frequency change from output to the input frequency of the repeater. And the offset will be what the difference in the two is. That's what an offset is. Normal offset for VHF communications is 5 megahertz. Normal offset for UHF communications is, I got that backwards. UHF communications is 5 megahertz. VHF communication, it's 600 kilohertz, not quite a megahertz. So with that, people have put in band plans that use discrete sections specified for repeater inputs and outputs, leaving room for code for packet radio on those frequencies and other things that go by. In the Bofang, the one that like the one that's sold on the NLA website, you have about 128 memories that you can have access to. It's pretty hard. I don't know, maybe if you're in a area that has lots and lots of repeaters over a small area, like a big city, you might have a problem. Out here, I've gotten up to about 100 before, but not much beyond that. And that was including all the frequencies I wanted to tune to that had AWOS stations, which are automated weather observing station that are at airports. And I'm sorry, go ahead. Okay, I assumed she didn't want anything. That was a random. I had all of the airport frequencies, general airport frequencies, so I could listen to them as I was driving to an airport. I had the AWOS, so I could hear the current weather exactly the way it is. I had the repeaters that I used most often. I also had the repeaters that had emergency traffic on them. All of these things you can put and design them. Think about how you want to do it. One thing that I found is people like to use the first 10 channels, and then they just keep adding from then on up. What I did on mine was I programmed the first 10, 15 channels, 20 channels with repeater frequencies, and then I turned the knob backwards, which when it gets to 3, 2, 1, 0, the next twist on the knob will give you the top number, like 127 or 128, depending upon what radio you're using. And then I would put all of the AWOS stations in the airports down on those. So I knew that when I was on memory number 126, that was had to be an AWOS station or a frequency for an airport, a traffic frequency for an airport. If I was on something higher, then I knew it was a repeater that I wanted to talk to. And then right down below the airport frequencies, I put the 10 frequencies that are used by NOAA. And if you get CHIRP, you get some, let's see, where is that? Got a problem here. Okay, that's not working. You get several configuration files that you can use in CHIRP to program up some highly used frequencies on your radio. Let me see if I can get to those. Navigate. That one. Let's see if we can have some of those. CHIRP. CHIRP. I had this up. Some stocks. So DE FreeNet frequencies. That's German FreeNet, EU LPD, and RMR, PMR channels. I don't know what those are. French Marine, FR Marine, VHF channels. KDR 444. Channels, NOAA weather alert, so they've already programmed in the NOAA channels. They're around 162 megahertz, I believe. UK business radio, simple light frequency, so you can listen in to other different frequencies. US 60 meter channels, center. US 60 meter channels, dial. I don't know what the difference is. US calling frequencies, so your US calling frequencies are 14652 on VHF and 52.525 on 6 meters, and on 70 centimeters, 446.0. So it's good to know all those little things, and the CHIRP comes with them. These are canned files that you can use. And you can use CHIRP. What you can do is you got to buy a cable. It plugs into your little what do you call that port? The port on the right side, on the other side, 11, the accessory jack. You open up your accessory jack, and there's a place for a speaker mic and a set of headphones of some kind. And you use those. The computer uses those with a special cable that has a little chip that goes into USB and talks to the radio. And depending upon what the format is, you use Chirp to read the radio. And once it's read, that's what your radio is programmed for. You can read where you've got everything. Then you put in whatever you want, and you can actually move it using CSV files to a spreadsheet, your favorite spreadsheet. Then you can change it however you want. You don't have to use it as a spreadsheet, but you can share your radio with everybody else. So that makes it very fast to duplicate a whole set of radios. So when does that come in handy? That comes in handy when you've been tasked as a communications person for your committee of safety to take six Chirp radios. You've been given the money to buy six Bofang radios. You bring them home. You set up how it should be. You get some input from everybody else. This is what we should see on it. And you program one radio until it's perfect. It's exactly the way you want it to be. Then you duplicate that and create a Chirp file. And it's just a regular CSV file. All these files are regular CSV files. You look at that CSV file. You pull it into Chirp, and then you begin to program every other radio. Now, you might have to get out of Chirp and go back, but you program each radio. This is similar to the procedure that Bob Cagle was using to program these radios that you can ask to get programmed on the way to you so that it's already ready to go when you open the box and you don't have to learn all this. But if you are given the task to program, let's say, 10 radios for a committee of safety so that you could hand them out to everybody, you would hand them and they would have the entire set of frequencies that everybody had on their radio. More likely to get the right repeaters, more likely to make communication contact with the party you're looking for, if you all have the same frequencies. And then you can say, let's go to frequency number 17. 17, I'll meet you on 17 in 30 seconds. You go to number 17. Now, you know what it was. The person you're talking to just goes to memory 17, and voila, you're talking on a different frequency, and maybe you've avoided some interference somehow by moving off of there. Maybe you had somebody that was giving you a hard time. Well, we definitely want to leave those where they are and go somewhere else. And maybe they don't know what channel 17 means to you. You know what it means. Your person you're talking to knows what it means, but they don't. So that's just an added thing that may come in handy, may not. So you can program all these radios, and you could probably do it in the process of about an hour and a half, 2 hours to do 10 radios. It doesn't take that long once you have the radio hooked up properly, and that is one of the problems. Some of the cables that you buy don't fit in that slot, access jack on the, as you're looking at the front of the radio, it's the big one on the right, or not the biggest. It's the upper one on the right with two holes underneath it. You buy the right cable. Some of the cables were made a little bit differently, and that hole's not very big. So what you have to do is trim off the corners of the connector and push it in. Also, some connectors have the wrong chip, and they're never going to talk to any of the radios and talk with Chirp properly. There are other issues, but you can overcome them because that church chirp mailing list, I've seen them answer all kinds of problems multiple times. And with the capabilities, if you go up to the CHIRP website and you start looking through the FAQs, you're more than likely going to find every problem that you've ever come across and the solution for them. So I would encourage anyone that has one of these radios to get CHIRP, and it works on Mac, it works on Windows, and it works on Linux. I'm so glad, and because I only have Linux. So any questions with what I've said so far? I've sure given you a lot of information, huh?
Is that the CHIRP by danplanet.com?
That's him.
Okay, I found it. I'll put it on the website.
All right, thank you. And there's a looking at the top of that webpage, they have a blue banner like ours, and
right.
The different places you can go to are overview, download, activity, roadmap, issues, news, wiki, and repository. All of these things have gobs of information, and I'm just thrilled to have CHIRP. I love CHIRP. It's just fabulous. And I have had it working on my radio. I haven't used it in a while because I programmed up my radios, and I went backpacking up in the wilderness area, Eagle's Nest Wilderness area, just on the other side of the Continental Divide here in Colorado, up north of I-70 between Silverthorn and Kremling. Maybe some of you know where that is. We went to Upper Cataract Lake. And I got a little bit of time here. I ought to get to a high place that I know. I looked on Google before I got there and programmed my radio. I knew I could hit the repeater. I keyed it up, and I couldn't hit the repeater. I said, golly, how did I make such a bad mistake? I got back home, and I looked. What did I do wrong? And I kept looking and looking. And then on the webpage, I found where they had changed all the side tones on all the repeaters the week I went on backpacking, and I had no idea. You can't win for losing. Does everybody understand what a side tone is? Is there anybody that doesn't? Don't be afraid. Don't be shy. I'll just pick on you. It's not a big deal. Okay. I'm going to assume nobody knows because nobody said anything. Say what?
No comment.
A side tone is a tone that the radio, it's a sub-audible tone. It's mixed in there with the signal, but you can't hear it, but the repeater and any other radio that's listening to you can. Now, if you turn all your side tones off, you'll hear everybody at the same time. But if you have your side tones off and you try and transmit to many repeaters, I'd say almost all of them, repeater's not going to hear you. That's because it wants to hear a particular side tone. And these tones, some of them change once in a while. Some of them don't change. It just all depends on what the repeater, the person who is responsible for the repeater, decides to do. But to talk to a given repeater, you have to have its frequency, its output frequency, its input frequency, and any tones that it's using. And it usually uses one tone, and that tone goes out. And if you've got that tone going out on your signal, it will listen to your signal and put it out everywhere. And if somebody else tries to talk on the same repeater but they don't have the tone on, they'll never hear you. There are some repeaters here in Colorado that are used by the storm spotters and the weather spotters. And I've been a weather spotter before. I just haven't had time this last few years. But the tones that they use during weather spotting are different than the tones that they use on a regular basis. So you can talk on that repeater all day long, And then when some bad weather comes in, all of a sudden you're not able to talk on the repeater, but you hear lots of traffic of people looking at clouds and trying to spot tornadoes before they get there and reporting hill damage and size of the hill and what they're seeing wherever they are. But you can't talk. Why is this? They got a different side tone. And some radios, your more expensive radios, will have stuff that will discover the side tone for you and put it on. There's also something called tone squelch. Tone squelch says, if I don't get that tone from me, from the person who's trying to transmit to me when I'm receiving, I'm not going to unkey my squelch. I'm not going to open my squelch to let that signal come in. Some of you may have seen these FRS radios, and you can put up a channel. I'm going to use channel 17. I got a 17 kick today. I hope that isn't indicative of something. What happens is you both get on channel 17, and your radio listens only to channel 17, and it transmits only on channel 17. Well, that means you're using side tone number 17. Turn your tones off totally. Now your friend you're talking to won't be able to hear you because you're not transmitting that 17, but you'll be able to hear everybody that's talking on that frequency. Because the seven, it's not, you're not requiring a 17 coming in. You got to think of it coming in and transmitting. A tone squelch is for reception. If it doesn't have that side tone on it, or PL tone, or whatever kind of tone you want to have it, there's different tones. I'm oversimplifying it. Please excuse me. You're right if you have a different story, and I'll give you the floor, and you can talk all about it if you want to. But there's side tones. There's a whole list of them, and sometimes they use a frequency like 88.5. The repeaters that I was trying to hit while I was on my backpacking trip are here in Colorado, and they're part of the Colorado connection, Colorado connection set of repeaters that are all linked together. There's about 24 of them. And when you key up on one, you give it a second, you give it at least 2 seconds, and it keys up all in the entire network. And then it, whatever you say, and the repeater hears, it puts out on the repeater, and it puts it out to all 17 of those repeaters across Colorado. More likely to get help on that frequency than a single repeater that's only listened to by people in the local area. So they had changed their tone. It had been 1, 2, 3 hertz tone for about 10 years, maybe more. 15 years, I knew of it for 15 years as 1, 2, 3 hertz tone. That week that I went backpacking last year, they changed them all to 88.5. So it was sending out a signal of 88.5 hertz. These are all subaudible tones. You can hear them if they were strong enough, but they make them very tiny and very weak. Okay, my tongue got tangled. Do we have any questions or comments or suggestions or criticisms? Please call now.
Well, this is KC3HVA. A couple days ago, I had a few minutes, and I grabbed my ARRL magazine and was just kind of thumbing through it. And I ran across an article about two guys, one in California, one in Connecticut. And they wanted to see if maybe they could communicate. And there are programs out there that will predict the propagation conditions and so on. I guess you put your locations in and time of day and things of this nature. And it will go ahead and calculate for your systems what you might expect in terms of signal-to-noise ratio, which is a factor that will tell you your probability to a certain extent of being able to communicate. And so by using that as a guide, the signal noise ratio, they found the times of day and the days of the week and so on that were best. And so they set it up and they ran, I think it was 5 hours continuously on given days, starting at a certain time, ending at a certain time. And they were using the, like, frequency shift keying sorts of things, digital device. And the one person would turn it on, and then they would run it for 5 hours, and the person on the other end would monitor it. And they actually were able to communicate on, I think it was 2 days, over that distance, which is on the order of 2,500 miles probably, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I know there are a number of programs that compute pieces of that problem, but apparently there was one, and I don't recall what the acronym for it was, that will run through the whole procedure for it. And I thought maybe that might be a topic that might be of interest for people, just to let you know if you have a friend somewhere, and this isn't going to work for UHF or VHF, but for the lower frequencies, it might give you a clue as to whether or not you might be able to communicate with family, knowing the locations, or friends, or other people, maybe business associates, whatever. So it might be interesting to discuss some of those programs if you have tried them or have knowledge of them, Terry. Over.
Well, KC3HPA, this is KI0RE. No, I don't. I've used them before. I don't know a whole lot about them. I know they exist. I haven't tried to look them up in a while or use them in a while, and that's a very interesting topic. I can take a look at them. But the point is that you have to have the right equipment to talk that distance, and the right equipment is you've got to either build it yourself, get a kit and build the kit, which they've got some very low-cost 40-meter radios out there that'll do code.
Mm-hmm.
Or you got to drop the money to get an HF radio that you can do it on a general-purpose HF radio that you can do it on any frequency you need to be on. Because those bands that can communicate that far, they open and close. And
right.
You can reach somewhere or you cannot reach somewhere, depending upon whether the sun's up or the sun's down, or there's lightning in the area on one end, or there are several other things. The humidity sometimes makes a difference. On and on and on. Is there a big mountain range? Is the mountain range where it doesn't need to be, i.e., it'll work, except this one bounce hits this mountain range and really can't skip to you because this one mountain range kills the signal on that particular skip. These things are skipping out, and the strongest part is in the center of that skip. Anyone who's listened to an AM radio, not the digital, but the regular AM radio, hears the lightning and hears the signal, especially on a distant station. I've listened to KOA here in Denver while traveling across New Mexico in the middle of the night because it's a Skyway station. And it fades in and out. I know that if I can't hear it right now, the static's real bad. I just need to keep driving. And about 2 miles later, it's booming again. And I can hear every word as if I was in town. So that skip, it doesn't, if you could imagine, it doesn't hit perfectly. Certain spots have a very strong signal, and some spots have a very weak signal. And depending upon the atmospheric conditions, the two stations might be in a strong spot of each other, or might be one of them's in the strong spot of that one, but that one's not in the strong spot for the other one, and that kind of thing. But yeah, we can talk about that sometime. Why don't you give us a report?
Well, I looked for the magazine, and I can't find where I put it.
That's okay. I want to encourage everybody to do what Jan did, and I guess I should do it too. you go up and you pay the $35 or $45, whatever it is, to join the ARRL for a year. And they give you the magazine. Of course, you're paying for the magazine. But it sure has a lot of information, does it not, Jan?
Yes, it does. I was impressed. I hadn't taken time to really scan through it before. But it's got a whole host of information in there.
There's a lot of guys that value the stuff that's in there. And if you go back to the September 97 issue of the QST, which I think it's called, you will see a story about Bart Juniors. And that was right down here in the county I live in. And I used to help them. I helped them for about 10 years. I was an instructor there. So anyway, okay. Have we sufficiently stabbed your question?
Oh, yes. Very good. Very good.
All right. Anybody else? Programming radios can be a real chore because not only do you have to teach yourself how to program a radio, you've got to figure out what frequencies. I guess I should say that the other way. Not only do you have to figure out what frequencies you want to get on, you have to figure out how to get those frequencies, the offsets, the side tones required into that radio in a proper way so that they make sense. Do it one time. Program in three. Just take three repeaters. Program them into your Bofang. And see if you can talk on them once you get your ham license. Then get chirp and see the difference. And you'll never go back. If you get good to know those things, good to know how to do it so that you can do it on the fly. If you get somewhere where maybe the repeaters you normally use you can't use anymore, but somebody slips you a piece of paper and says, try this repeater on this frequency. And you forget to put it in your radio, but you remember to bring the piece of paper, figuring that at some point you'll be sitting by the lake not doing anything, and that's the whole point of going on a backpacking trip. But you want to put in, so you use the time to program your radio up. Good to have your instructions and what that frequency was and what the offset and the side tones are supposed to be. There's something else I'm sure I'm forgetting. I don't see them right now. There's one thing I didn't talk about, so I'll talk about that just briefly here, and that is that there's a lot of radios going digital now. Don't know that these Bofangs that we latched onto will do digital. But the digital stuff gives you a whole bunch more. It opens up so many more options. Not only does a person get what frequency you're on and who you are, it also sends them, if you want, it sends them your location. It sends them who you are, what your name is, anything you want to stick in the packets that go down. Because as they transmit, they're compressing your audio down into as few packets as possible. And so 1 second of speech might only take a quarter of a second or a half a second to transmit. Well, those other packets can be used to send all kinds of other information. And so digital radios have come a very long ways. And I broke my radio last year that I had as a digital radio. I look forward to getting back into the hobby and defeated myself right out of the gate. So anyway, all right, if there's no final questions or comments, anybody? I will go ahead and close the net. This is the NLA Hems Net. I'm grateful for everyone's participation. I'm thankful. How many people did we have, Jan?
Oh, we only got six tonight.
That's great. Thank you, six, for coming. I'd appreciate it if you would start studying and ask me some questions. I'd love it. We discuss at the NLA Hams Net. This net is held every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Central or 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We talk about things that have to do with the NLA and ham radio for communications. We welcome everybody that wants to come on and talk. I'll give you the floor. All you got to do is say something, and I would be happy to concentrate on any particular issues that you have that I can answer, that I can talk about. We're so thankful that everybody came in, all of you that did, and we hope that you have a wonderful week. Study, come back with some questions next week, and let's talk about what you want to talk about. This is KI0RE, Terry from Colorado, and the net is now closed.